Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're jumping into the really fascinating world of puer tea.
Yeah, it's quite a journey we're taking you on. This isn't your average tea.
No, definitely not. It's this unique fermented tea, super prized from China's Yunnan province.
Huh.
We've looked at some great guides to, you know, really pull out the essentials for you.
Exactly. The mission today is, well, to give you a kind of shortcut to understanding puer, its history, the different types, how it's made, the surprising health stuff, and even how to brew it right.
We want you walking away feeling like you really get it, but without your head spinning.
Right. No information overload, just the core insights.
And it's more than just a drink, isn't it? It feels like a story in a cup, a journey through time, ancient skills.
Absolutely. And there are some cool secrets behind how it gets that really unique character. So where should we start? The beginning.
Let's do it. Back to the roots.
Okay, so puer tea. We're talking serious history here. Over 2,000 years, it goes way back to the Han Dynasty, specifically in Yunnan Province in China.
2,000 years. That's incredible.
Isn't it? And it really became prominent during the Tang and Song Dynasties.
And that ties into the Tea Horse Road, I imagine. That legendary trade route.
It absolutely does. The Tea Horse Road was, well, it was more than just a road. It was this rugged network, vital for trade, yeah, but also for cultural exchange between China and Tibet.
So puer was traveling this tough route.
Exactly. It became a staple for traders, nomads, monks, everyone on those paths. They valued it for the strong flavor, sure, but also for the health benefits they believed it had.
Imagine those tea cakes bouncing along for months.
Right. And doing different climates, altitudes. It's amazing they survived, let alone became prized.
Did that journey itself change the tea?
That's actually a great point and leads us right into the Ming Dynasty. This was a key time.
Okay.
This is when people really noticed that puer could actually improve with age. Its natural fermentation process started to be understood and refined.
So the long journey wasn't just transport. It was part of the making process almost.
Yeah. In a way, yes. The maturation happened kind of naturally as the tea cakes traveled. The changing conditions, humidity, altitude, it all subtly enhanced the flavors over time. It was like a happy accident discovered through necessity.
Wow. And it wasn't just for traders anymore by then.
No, it gained wider recognition, became sought after across Asia. It even ended up as a tribute tea for Chinese emperors.
A tribute tea. So a real symbol of prestige.
Totally. Wealth, health, tradition.
Mm.
All wrapped up in this tea. So what does this history mean for you listening? Well, it shows how puer has adapted, survived, and flourished for centuries. It's a real testament to the art of tea making.
Okay, so that's the epic history. But today, when we talk puer, there are basically two main camps, right? Raw and ripe, Sheng and Shou.
That's right. Two distinct worlds, really, shaped by different fermentation approaches.
Let's start with the raw type, Sheng. What's the story there?
So Sheng puer is made from sun-dried leaves, the mocha we'll talk about later, which then undergo a slow natural fermentation. And when I say slow, I mean it can take decades.
Decades, wow.
Yeah. Initially, it might taste quite vibrant, maybe a bit astringent, grassy even. Mm-hmm. But the fascinating part, the real insight here, is thinking of Sheng like a living time capsule.
A living time capsule. I like that.
Yeah. Connoisseurs don't just drink it. They collect it. They invest in its potential, knowing that each passing year adds layers of complexity, a transformation you just don't get any other way. It's all about that patient evolution.
Okay. So Sheng is a long game. What about Shou? The ripe version, you said it was developed later, like in the 1970s.
Exactly. Ripe puer, or shou, is quite different. It uses an artificial accelerated fermentation process called wodui.
Wodui.
Yep. It speeds the whole aging thing up to just a matter of months, really. They developed it because demand for aged tasting puer was growing.
How does that work? The acceleration?
Well, basically, they take the raw tea leaves, the maocha, moisten them, and pile them up in a controlled environment. They turn the piles, manage the heat and humidity. It stimulates intense microbial fermentation.
So you get an aged taste much faster.
Precisely. The result is a much smoother, mellower tea. It's got these deep, earthy notes, and the liquid is usually very dark, almost inky.
And who does that appeal to?
It's great for people who want that mature, rounded flavor, but, you know, don't want to wait 20 years for it.
Makes sense.
But really, both types, whether it's the slow, natural Sheng or the accelerated Shou, they both showcase incredible artistry from Yunnan. Different paths, same origin of craftsmanship.
Let's dig into that craftsmanship. The production process must be pretty detailed. Where does it even begin?
It starts right at the source of the leaves. We're talking large, mature leaves harvested from ancient tea trees.
Ancient trees.
Oh, yeah. Some are claimed to be over 1,000 years old, found mainly in the mountains of Yunnan. The age of the tree, the specific environment. It all contributes massively to the final tea's character. It's not just any leaf.
Okay, so you've got these special leaves. What happens next? Are the initial steps the same for both Sheng and Shou?
Yes, the first few steps are common. First, withering. The leaves are spread out to lose some moisture. Then, pan frying. This is called shocking, and it's really crucial. It stops oxidation dead in its tracks.
So it doesn't become like black tea.
Exactly. It helps keep that greener character and fresher taste. After frying, they roll the leaves.
All right, rolling.
It shapes them, but also breaks the cell walls a bit, which helps with drying and flavor development later on.
Right.
And the final step in this initial phase is sun drying. This creates the base tea, called Maoja rough tea. That sun drying gives it a particular character.
Maoja. Okay, so that's the starting point before they decide if it's going to be raw or ripe.
Precisely. This is where the paths split.
So for raw, for Sheng?
For Sheng, it's relatively simple from here. The Maoja is usually compressed into cakes, bricks, little tucha nests, whatever shape, and then it's just left to age naturally over time, years, decades. That's the patience part.
And for ripe, Shou. This is where that wudui thing comes in.
Yes, this is the extra, really defining step for Shou.
Right.
And here's where it gets really interesting, scientifically almost. Yeah. They take the Maoja, pile it up, add water, cover it, and then carefully manage it for weeks, maybe months. They turn the piles regularly.
Why? What are they controlling?
They're controlling the temperature and humidity very precisely to encourage specific microbial activity bacteria and fungi. It's this intense accelerated fermentation that develops those characteristic smooth, earthy, dark flavors of Shou.
So it's like guided, sped up aging. A controlled manipulation of nature.
That's a perfect way to put it. Cultivating a specific environment for the tea to transform quickly.
It's amazing. Taste, history, and then there are the health benefits people talk about. That's another whole layer to pour.
It really is. It's quite well known for helping with digestion, particularly fatty foods. It can be quite soothing on the stomach.
How does it do that?
It's thought that the enzymes and microorganisms from the fermentation process help break down food. That's why lots of people drink it after a big, rich meal.
Makes sense. Very practical. Any other benefits that are maybe less obvious, linked to that fermentation, perhaps?
Definitely. There's research suggesting it can help with cholesterol levels, specifically lowering the bad LDL cholesterol.
Really? How?
Well, get this. The fermentation process actually produces compounds that are natural statins.
Wow. Natural statins? In tea? That's pretty surprising.
It is, isn't it? And there's more.
Like what? Weight management. You hear that sometimes.
Yeah, there's evidence it can play a role there too. It seems to boost metabolism. The catechins, which are antioxidants, and the caffeine content likely help increase fat burning and energy use.
Okay.
Plus, going back to that fermentation, it really boosts the probiotic content. So you're getting beneficial bacteria and yeast, which is great for your gut health.
Right, supporting the whole microbiome. We know how important that is.
Absolutely. And finally, like many good teas, it's packed with antioxidants, catechins, polyphenols. These fight-free radicals reduce inflammation.
Which helps with overall health, maybe reduces risk of chronic diseases down the line.
That's the idea. So if you connect all these dots, digestion, cholesterol, metabolism, gut health, antioxidants, it's not just a tasty brew.
It's like a holistic wellness approach in a cup.
Yeah, pretty much. Every sip contributing to your body's balance.
Okay, so we know the history, the types, how it's made, the benefits. Now, how do we actually brew this stuff properly at home to get the best out of it? Sounds like there's a bit of an art to it.
There definitely is. It's more of a ritual than just dumping a bag.
Hmm.
The first step, and it's really important, is rinsing the tea.
Rinsing? You mean washing it?
Sort of. If you pour hot water over the leaves, whether they're loose or you've broken a piece off a cake, swirl it around for maybe 10, 20 seconds max, and then discard that water.
Why do that?
A couple of reasons. It helps to awaken the compressed leaves, gets them ready to release flavor. It also washes away any potential dust or impurities from the aging process. Think of it as waking the tea up gently.
Okay, wake up rinse. Got it. Then what? Water temperature must be key, especially with the two different types.
Huge difference. For raw pu'er, Sheng, you don't want boiling water. Aim for around 85 to 90 degrees Celsius. That's like 185 to 194 Fahrenheit.
Why cooler?
It helps preserve the more delicate, sometimes floral or fruity notes in younger Sheng and stops it from getting too bitter or astringent right away.
And for the ripe, the shot.
For show, you go full boil. 100 degrees Celsius, 212 Fahrenheit. You need that high heat to really penetrate the leaves and draw out those deep, dark, earthy flavors. Totally different approach.
Right. Makes sense. What about steeping times? How long do you leave it in?
It evolves. The first actual infusion after the rinse should be pretty short, maybe just 10 to 20 seconds.
Then it's quick.
Yeah, especially with good quality leaf. It's just to get the leaves opening up. Then for each following infusion, you gradually increase the steeping time. Maybe add 5, 10, or 15 seconds each time.
So the flavor changes with each steep.
Absolutely. That's one of the real joys of puer. You get multiple infusions from the same leaves.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit.
High-quality puer, especially Sheng, can give you many, many infusions. Some can go easily 10 times, even more.
10 times? From the same little bit of leaf?
Yep. And each infusion can offer a slightly different experience. The flavors develop, shift, deepen. You might get different notes coming forward. It's like a conversation with the tea, revealing itself layer by layer.
That's amazing. It really encourages you to slow down and pay attention.
Exactly. It's the opposite of a quick caffeine hit. It's an experience.
So quite a journey we've taken today, really, from ancient China and the tea horse road.
Right, through understanding the difference between raw Sheng and ripe Shou.
Looking at how it's actually made, those ancient trees, the Maosha, the Wodui process.
Then touching on all those surprising health benefits, the digestion, cholesterol, gut health.
And finally, the art of actually brewing it, the rinse, the temperatures, those multiple infusions.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And hopefully, whether you find yourself drawn more to that, you know, bright, evolving character of raw puer or the deep, comforting earthiness of ripe puer.
You can see there's a really unique and enjoyable experience waiting for you. It's definitely an exploration.
It really is.
And maybe that leaves us with a final thought to mull over.
Okay.
How does a drink like this, with literally millennia of history, something that transforms so profoundly over time, how does that challenge us today in our world of instant everything?
You mean, does it make us think about patience?
Exactly. Doesn't it kind of highlight the beauty in waiting and natural evolution in a way we don't often appreciate anymore? Something to think about next time you brew a cup.